Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Hei, Chapter 45. The previous chapter is one of the most devastating in a book of sad and difficult stories. Yirmiyahu pleads with the Jewish community relocated to Egypt to give up on the idols, and instead of thinking of their past with him and taking his words seriously, they tell him that they flat out don't care what he has to say and will no longer listen to anything. In that chapter, Yirmiyahu utters the final words of Nevuah to the Jewish community that will be recorded in his book. Chapter 45 is a departure from the storyline in many ways. Firstly, it happens much earlier, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. You will recall that a lot happened that year. That was the year that Egypt retreated and Babylonia captured Yerushalayim. Jehoiakim went from being a loyal vassal to Egypt to a forced vassal to Babylonia. This is the year of Yirmiyahu's prophecy in Parak 25, where he tells Jehoiakim that he must submit to the Babylonian occupation as an acknowledgement of Hashem's hand in his life. It is also the year that Yirmiyahu had Baruch write a scroll to read at the Beit HaMikdash because he was not able himself to go there and prophesy. A second departure from the storyline comes not from the timing, but from the topic. The past few Prekim have dealt with grand narratives. Yirmiyahu thrown into a pit, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the murder of Gedaliah, and the move of the community to Egypt. This parak slows down and focuses on one person, and one who has not been a main character in our story, even though he has always been present. And that person is Baruch ben Neriah. In fact, this parak is a personal nevuah. As it says in verse 2, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael Alecha Baruch. This is what Hashem says to you, Baruch, specifically to Baruch, the ever loyal servant of Yirmiyahu. The nevuah is short, only three psukim, but it contains an interesting message which will reflect on the sefer as a whole. Yirmiyahu first starts with the background in verse 3. Amarta, you said, Baruch, Oy na li. Ki asaf Hashem yagon al machovi, yagati ben chasi umnucha lo matzati. Woe is to me, you said, Baruch. Hashem has added suffering to my pain. I sighed from my pain, and I was never able to find rest. Yirmiyahu reflects on Baruch feeling weary, feeling like he had no purpose. And it was Hashem that added, yagon al machovi, sorrow to my pain. It's Hashem that caused Baruch to feel that he cannot find rest. Hashem responds to this pain that Baruch has expressed in verse 4. Ko tomar elav, say to Baruch, Hashem instructs Yirmiyahu to say over to Baruch, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Hine asher baniti ani hores, vet asher natati ani notesh. Whatever I have built, I am about to destroy, and what I have planted, I am about to uproot, that kol ha'aretahi, and the whole land will fall to this. Hashem responds to Baruch's complaint by revealing to Baruch the pain that Hashem is experiencing. I am in the process of destroying everything I have built. I am uprooting my plants. All the effort that I've put into building my house and my farm, I am ruining with my own hands. B'nai Yisrael, who are Hashem's seed, his great work is being destroyed, and Hashem is the one who is doing it. You will notice, of course, the reference to Yirmiyahu's first nevuah, his prophetic job, to destroy and pull down, to uproot and to overthrow, to build and to plant. The nation that Hashem had hoped to continue cultivating is so diseased that the farmer must prune it, must cut down the dead branches, but it is a hard process. The farmer loves the plant. The builder must knock down parts of the house that are corroded, but it is not an easy or comfortable activity. There were years of sweat and tears that went into this product. It's a terrible thing to break down, and therefore he says to Baruch in verse 5, V'ata tevakesh lecha gedolot al tevakesh. Don't look for glory. Don't look for great things. Ki hineni mevi ra'al kol basar nu'um Hashem. I am going to bring evil on every person, says Hashem. V'natati lecha et nafshecha l'shalal. You will escape with your life. Your life will be your spoils of war. Al kol hamikomot asher teleichsam. You won't die, Baruch, but that's about it. Anywhere you go, you will stay alive. Says Yirmiyahu, don't look for gedolot, Baruch. We are in a time of destruction. You will come out alive, but this is not a time to look for greatness. The word gedolot is almost unique in Tanakh. It's not exactly, the translation is not exactly greatness. It's more like accomplishments. It comes up only this one time in Sefer Yirmiyahu and five times in the rest of Tanakh, those times being in Tehillim and Iyov. All of them are talking about Hashem and the great things that Hashem has done. This is the only place in Tanakh that it refers to a person. With this context in mind, we can understand what Yirmiyahu is telling Baruch. Al tivakesh gedolot. Don't look to be like God. Don't look to have godly accomplishment. You can't do what Hashem does. You can't do what you really want to do, which is to create real change, to change the world, to make an impact that will outlast your own life. Baruch's job is to be a scribe, to write down Yirmiyahu's words and convey them to the people. But his life is hard. He's always on the run with Yirmiyahu. When Yirmiyahu is in prison, Baruch is in prison with him. We know that because he writes the deed of sale to Hanamel in Parak 32. And that happens in the prison. Baruch is being asked to do, and at this time, Baruch is being asked to do something dangerous, which he knows will almost definitely not work. He's being asked to take Yirmiyahu's scroll, go to the Beit HaMikdash, and read it in front of the people. He's putting himself on Jehoiakim's hit list. And it's probably not going to work. All of Baruch's life, he's running with Yirmiyahu, and all he sees is that the situation just gets worse. He sighs in pain. He wants things to be different. He wants gedolot, to see some type of impact, to see lasting change. Yirmiyahu says no. V'natati lecha et nafshecha l'shalal. You will come out alive, but I cannot promise you that you will feel satisfied. But take your life as a gift. We don't think in this sefer of Baruch ben Neriya as a real person. He's the one who stands in Yirmiyahu's shadow, always ready to help, ready to put himself in danger to deliver the scroll to Jehoiakim, hiding out with Yirmiyahu, keeping him company, writing out the deed of land for Yirmiyahu and Hanamel when Yirmiyahu buys the land in Anatot. This parak fleshes out Baruch's character. In little glimpses of a nevuah, it shows us that Baruch was a real person, just as real as Yirmiyahu, and he had hopes and dreams for himself, hopes that were not fulfilled among the other millions of unfulfilled hopes at the time of a calamity. He too complained of his hard life in a similar vein to Yirmiyahu. And it is Yirmiyahu that has to offer him some modicum of comfort and direction as to how to deal with this difficult life, although we know that the nevuah really comes from Hashem. Which brings us to the main question. Why is this parak placed here? It's completely out of place. It belongs with parak 36, the story of Jehoiakim burning the scroll, or honestly anywhere else in the narrative. The section that we have just finished is Yirmiyahu's last nevuah to the Jews in Egypt. After this five pasuk parak, we're starting a new section of nevuot to the nation. And then after that, there's just one more parak that goes once again through the history of the Korban, starting from the reign of Tzidkiyahu. While Sefer Yirmiyahu is not in chronological order, the past group of prakim have been, starting in parak 37. This 1-5 pasuk parak could not be more out of place. It happens in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. It's not about the nation. Rather, it's directed at one person. It lets us in on the private life of a person we wouldn't have noticed. We wouldn't have missed it. And it doesn't even seem to have so much to do with the Korban story. Why is it here? And then, honestly, you can ask, why is this parak in the Sefer at all? If it would have been left out, we really wouldn't have noticed. One way of looking at this question is to think of this parak in terms of the structure of the last section, the historical section, which starts in parak 37 and goes through parak 44. The Korban takes place in parak 39, and then it too actually has a small interruption right after the Korban. It's a nevuah that chronologically is also out of place, not as much as this one is, but still it's a nevuah that occurred a few months earlier in the story, and that is the prophecy to Eved Melech Hakushi. If you'll remember, that's the person that saved Yirmiyahu from the pit. In that nevuah, right after the Chorban, Yirmiyahu has a special, it ends the parak of the Chorban, and Yirmiyahu has a special nevuah to Evimelech HaKushi, where he tells him the Chorban is coming, that's how we know it happened earlier, and you will survive. In that nevuah, right after explaining the devastation of the Chorban and the cruel end of Tzidkiyahu's reign, we hear another individual private nevuah to the least likely person that one would expect, a non-Jew. Yirmiyahu tells him not to worry. He will escape the coming calamity. And Yirmiyahu says in verse 18, we're in Parak 39, Ki malet al matacha ubacharav lo tipol v'hayta lecha nafshecha l'shalal ki batachtabi ne'um Hashem. You will escape, you will not fall to the sword, and your own life will be your spoils of war because you trusted in me, says Hashem. The parallel language between these two stories cannot be ignored and can perhaps give us an insight into Baruch's nevuah. Both of them are told, Hayta lecha nafshecha l'shalal, your life will be your spoils of war. The whole world at this time was going towards disaster. There were no moral people left. Even the poorest of the poor showed themselves to be corrupt and easy to turn on their prophets and on their contemporaries. But someone was still good. He was the exception that proved the rule that people can still be moral if given a chance. Evan Melech, as a person, gives us a type of consolation after the Chorban. The fact that he exists shows that maybe one day there can be a whole group of people like him. In the same vein, Baruch gives us consolation after that terrible confrontation that Yirmiyahu had with the community in Egypt. That community was willing in a second to turn their backs on Hashem in favor of the easygoing and wealthier life they had in Tachpanes in Egypt. Maybe all people are just like that. They will always choose the easier path over the moral path, and there is no way forward. But then this little nevuah to Baruch says, maybe that's not always true. Look at Baruch. His life was hard. He wished for accomplishments that he could never achieve. According to the Midrash, Baruch's wish was to be a Navi himself, and he wasn't. Yirmiyahu is telling him, your loyalty stands for yourself. The fact that you went through everything with me and didn't give up is enough to show that there are people in the world like you who are loyal, and therefore Hashem answers Baruch's complaint about his hard life. And Hashem says to Baruch, Baruch, I hear you, and I'm telling you, the life that you're living is enough. The life that you're living is okay. You stand as a Dmut Adam, a type of person who's not like the rest of the people. Who, yes, life is hard, but that doesn't mean you turn on people, and it doesn't mean that you choose the immoral path. There's another way to look at this small parak, which may be even closer to what the real meaning of it is, and I'm very grateful to my student, Benny Ram, for pushing me to look at this parak in this way. And this new way of looking at it is hidden in a very mundane pasuk, the first one, the background pasuk. And it says, Hadavar asher diber Yirmiyahu hanavi el Baruch ben Neriah, bekitvo et hadvarim ha'ela al sefer mipi Yirmiyahu b'shana ha-revi'it li'Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu melech Yudah le'mor. This is what Hashem said to Yirmiyahu, to Baruch ben Neriah, when Baruch wrote these words in a book from the mouth of Yirmiyahu in the fourth year of Yehoyakim. Now we know what that book is, that scroll that Baruch is writing. It's going to be the nevuah that Yirmiyahu is telling him to read at the Beit HaMikdash. But there were a lot of ways we could have identified this parak in the fourth year of Yehoyakim. There was a lot going on. We could have said when Baruch was hiding out. We could have said it was the year that Nebuchadnezzar took over Judea. We could have said any number of things. It was a very monumentous year. Instead, this parak is organized with an act of writing. So perhaps instead of focusing on the nevuah itself, we should be focusing on this introduction, which highlights Baruch's role in writing this sefer, this book that we're reading. Now, of course, it's not talking about the whole book. It's talking only about that specific Nevuah that Yirmiyahu wanted to write in the scroll, which, if you recall from Parak 36, it says are all the Nevuah that Yirmiyahu had said up to that time. Now we've added a lot more, but the placement of this Parak is significant as it comes after Yirmiyahu closes his speech to the Jewish people, following up on the closing of Yirmiyahu's Nevuah with the writing of his book. Sends a different message. In the passage, Baruch asks for gedolot, some type of lasting impact, or according to the Midrash, for nevuah. Yirmiyahu responds in this perek, not actually with the words that he says, but the way he constructs this perek, by highlighting what Baruch did do. He wrote Yirmiyahu's prophecies. At the end of the Sefer, Yirmiyahu responds to Baruch that this role, not just the fact that Baruch will escape with his life, but Baruch the scribe is enough. He has seen no lasting change in the people, but at least they are together leaving the people a book. How would they know that thousands of years later, people would still be reading and learning from it? And what they weren't able to accomplish in their lifetime, they accomplished through the written word, not to their generation, but to many generations after. Baruch's role himself is similar according to the Midrash. He is the one who leaves Egypt and goes to Babylonia and becomes the teacher of Ezra, and thereby becomes one of the transitionary figures between the world of Nevi'im and the world of the scribes, the world of the written word, the world of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Perhaps Baruch accomplished his gedolot after all. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilo Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.